You're listening to a sermon by Steve Heinrichs, recorded on Sunday, July 7th, 2019, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I begin with two words to center our hearts. Powerful words that might not seem to connect at first, but by the end of this reflection, you'll see how they connect. The first comes from Mennonite World Conference. In April of 2018, MWC put out a statement of solidarity with Indigenous peoples, which included the following commitment. Quote, "We are saddened when Indigenous peoples are treated unjustly and are oppressed. Their pain is also our pain. Their cry, our cry. Mennonite World Conference stands united with our Indigenous brothers and sisters. Their struggle is our struggle. The cry of our sisters and brothers has also been heard and has found support through the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and its call for justice. The Declaration affirms Indigenous peoples' intrinsic human rights to life and dignity, but also to self-determination, spirituality, and land." A second word, this one from a saint, one of my heroes, Oscar Romero, Christian pastor who was murdered in El Salvador back in 1980 for his defense of human rights. "The church," says Romero, "is concerned about the rights of people and about life that is at risk. The church is concerned about those who suffer and those who are silenced. A church that does not join the poor and oppressed in order to speak out against the injustices committed against them is not the true church." Well, good morning, friends. It is a real honor to be here with you all. And as Carl mentioned, my name is Steve Heinrichs, and I'm the Indigenous Settler Relations Director for Mennonite Church Canada, and I admit that is a very clunky and awkward title, but it simply means I do a lot of reconciliation stuff for a living. A big part of my work is devoted to this, the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 calls to action, and specifically to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And it's this thing, the declaration, that I'd like us to explore this morning as we consider how we might flesh out the peace of Christ, the God who became poor, right here in these lands, the non-treaty lands of the Musqueam and Tsleil-Waututh. Show of hands if you've, before this morning, heard of the declaration. That's pretty good. In BC, you should hear about that. Premier Horgan's talked a lot about this. How many of you have had opportunity to actually read the declaration? That's not bad. Okay, but some of us, we got a little homework to do. It only takes you about an hour to read. The declaration was crafted over a period of some 20 years by Indigenous representatives and representatives from nation states like Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. It's a really short document that outlines the minimum standards that should guide relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples. It's not a radical document. It's 46 very brief articles simply riff on the golden rule. And we all know what that is, right? Do unto others what you want done to yourself. Don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. Here are a few examples from the declaration. Article 2, Indigenous peoples have the right to be free from discrimination. Article 10, Indigenous peoples shall not be forcibly removed from their homelands. Article 12, respect Indigenous spiritualities. And Article 32, if you want to do a resource project on Indigenous lands, you've got to receive their permission. So these are just basic human rights. Nothing fancy about them. I'm going to play a brief 3-minute video for you all that explains why we need the Declaration. This video was made by Indigenous adults and young people in Asia, and it talks about the problem of extractivism. That is, the big powers, corporations, and governments continually trying to get Native people's land, water, gold, oil, other goodies from them without their permission.
For generations, we have lived off this land, fishing, hunting, and gathering food, worshipping the spirits in the river, forest, and mountain. We are small in number, but we have a strong culture. This land gives us shelter. It gives us food. It gives us identity. Then new people came from all over the hills and along rivers. They destroyed our lands, our resources, our identity. They built and built and built. All this without even asking us.
Yes, it's true. They want to control our land without talking to us. Yesterday I went to the forest to collect roots. Gods forced me away. They shouted that the golden doors of the forest. They laughed at me and my clothes.
They can't do that. They can't treat you badly because you look different. You are human, just like they are. People came to the village last week. They told us we all have rights. Right to be treated equally. There are rights to work and food too.
Food? I went to the town to find some food. What I found? They are giving us money to destroy our mountain spirit.
But that is our mountain. It belongs to the whole community. The mountain protects us and unites us. Our ancestors have protected and nourished our lands for hundreds of years for us to live on. This is our natural right, so that we can survive and develop as a people. This is the same for all indigenous peoples. There are 370 million indigenous people all over the world. In different countries, we face similar problems. That is why our indigenous brothers and sisters around the world fought for our rights together. After 20 years, the United Nations finally adopted the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This guarantees communities like us the right to decide what happens in our land, right to protect our culture and identity.
We must demand that the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is put into action. We must defend our rights.
The Truth and Reconciliation Commission says that the Declaration is important. In fact, it says that the Declaration is critical. It's critical for how we can heal the broken relationships that we have between Native and non-Native peoples in this land. In fact, they call it the framework for healing this broken relationship. And that's why the TRC calls on all parts of Canadian society, be it government, business, schools, to embrace the Declaration. The TRC's 48th call to action specifically addresses the church. It says that all faith communities must adopt and comply with the UN Declaration and the basic Indigenous rights that it names. So over the past 4 years, many in the Mennonite community have tried to take that call seriously. To support the Declaration, we've organized a number of teach-ins on the Declaration to raise awareness. We produced 2 books on the Declaration and Indigenous rights. We have pressured the Canadian government to pass legislation that would affirm the Declaration in Canadian law. And now 3 of the 4 major parties have publicly committed to having that as part of their policy proposals going forward, all but the Conservatives. We also did 2 long fasts, prayer fasts, for Indigenous rights, and we even did a 600-kilometer pilgrimage in support of the Declaration. But what I'd like to share with you this morning is something more personal. It's about my story as a settler living in treated and stolen lands in Winnipeg, Manitoba, to honor the teachings of the Declaration, particularly as it concerns Indigenous peoples' rights to have a say in the determination of projects that take place in their home territories. And through this sharing, I hope you'll learn a bit more about the ways some people are trying to uphold Indigenous rights, how that relates to Christian faith, and maybe it'll spark some imagination as to how you all here at Point Grey might want to explore the Declaration. So here we go. Imagine that you're in front of a television camera and a reporter asks you, how much is reconciliation worth to you? What would you say? A little over a year ago, the CBC did a series of town hall meetings across Canada where they asked that question, how much is reconciliation worth to you? And what are you going to do about it? In an effort to support the TRC's 94 calls to action, the CBC wanted to know how much effort and what kinds of efforts governments, businesses, schools were actually putting into all these calls. But they were also interested in hearing from individual Canadians like you and I, how much is reconciliation worth to you and what are you doing about it? Now, I'm pretty confident a lot of you, all of you, could respond quite thoughtfully to that question. And many of you have probably taken up some wonderful reconciliation practices in your own lives. Maybe reconciliation is worth so much to you that you've decided to change the way you read. So alongside your Anabaptist classics, like The Politics of Jesus or The Peaceable Kingdom, you're now including Indigenous reading, like Dayagi Alfred's Wasase, a powerful reflection on how to nonviolently change structures so that they respect both Indigenous and Canadian peoples. Or maybe you're reading Dancing on Our Turtle's Back, a beautiful reflection by an Ojibwe woman, Leanne Simpson. Or perhaps reconciliation is worth so much to you that you've started attending Streams of Justice at Grandview Calvary Baptist Church. How many of you have heard of Streams of Justice? They're over on Commercial, close to First. Brilliant group that meets monthly to explore Indigenous concerns right here in Vancouver and to discover ways of supporting Indigenous-led initiatives for healing justice. Everything from things like the Sisters in Spirit vigils in support of missing and murdered Indigenous women to supporting folks who are rallying around the Unist'ot'en and their land defense in northern BC. Or maybe reconciliation is worth so much that a few of you have come together here at Point Grey Inter-Mennonite to organize your own Indigenous solidarity group. And this solidarity group is going to tackle, I'm putting this proposal before you, let's say, the big issue of inequitable educational funding for Native youth. Did you know that the average child on a First Nation reserve receives about $6,800 per year to support their funding, whereas the public schools student in BC or Manitoba, where I come from, gets around $11,000 per year to support their educational funding. That's crazy. And if we're honest, we'd just say, that's racist. Right? So what will we do about that? Now, the Liberals have supported, as part of their 2015 campaign, they did say, we're going to close that funding gap. And they have committed about half the amount of money to make that gap, to fill in that gap. But it's still only halfway. Right? So what would it be like here if you all decided to mobilize an advocacy campaign to fight that and help get other churches in the community on board? Because, well, that's how much reconciliation means to you. You wouldn't want that happening to your own kids or grandchildren. But what about me? How much does reconciliation mean to me, and what am I doing about it? You may have noticed I'm wearing an interesting shirt here. If you don't know who this is Martin Luther King. So yes, I'm on vacation. I didn't bring my dress clothes, but I purposely wore this shirt, if you know anything about the story behind this guy. And we'll dive into that in a second. As I said earlier, I do reconciliation work for a living. I come alongside people who are trying to think around these relationships, and I try to help mobilize them for justice. But there's a real danger in my work, for you see, one can get good at talking about reconciliation, saying the right words, encouraging others to get involved, and yet struggle to live it out personally in their own life. The ongoing challenge for people like me, people on the reconciliation payroll, is to find concrete ways to embody our convictions about reconciliation in genuine action. Well, last March 2018, on a Wednesday morning, I was sitting at my desk when the CBC phoned me up. Mr. Heinrichs, we'd like you as a church leader to come speak at our Winnipeg Town Hall tomorrow night. We want you to tell us how much reconciliation is worth to you. Well, I accepted the invitation, but I was pretty nervous. I am intimidated by cameras and crowds, but nervous also because I wanted to share my heart. And I knew that in doing so, I'd make myself vulnerable. But I've learned that reconciliation requires courage. So I decided to risk it. And that afternoon, I typed up what I was going to say, and it went pretty much like this. How much is reconciliation worth to me? It means everything. It's my only hope. For reconciliation is critical to the survival of Indigenous peoples. It's critical to the healing of Canada. And it's critical for the salvation of my community, the church. Now that last little bit, it probably sounds strange. Reconciliation is critical for the salvation of the church. So hear me out. At the heart of the Christian faith is the story that Paul proclaims in 2 Corinthians 8:9. The creator of the world became human, but not just any human. Creator intentionally became a poor human being who suffered with the poor, those under the burden of unjust structures. And that means for Christians in Canada that God is a God who enters into life with the poor, a God who takes sides with the victims of oppression over against the wealthy and dominant powers. And that means that if my Christian community really believes in that God, then we must put the hopes and needs of Indigenous peoples, the most bruised and battered peoples in these lands, at the center of our way of life, seeking their liberation and following their calls to action. And if my church doesn't do this, if it doesn't join the colonized, if it doesn't speak out against the injustices committed against them, then I think the words of Oscar Romero have some weight to them. We might not be the church, and we might not know God, at least fully. I know that for some, those words might sound revolutionary, but as it turns out, I didn't actually share them at the CBC Town Hall. I was there that evening with my daughter, Abby, and I was ready to share, but there was just too much going on that night for me to have a chance. As I went home that night, I thought, whew, maybe it's for the better. Maybe those words I was going to speak are just way too big. Do I really believe that reconciliation is my salvation? Am I actually willing to practice the kinds of radical justice that I'm calling my church to take up? 1 week later, I received another phone call in my Winnipeg office that would test those convictions. It was from a friend of mine here on the West Coast, not too far from this church. She was inviting me, along with other church leaders, to come to Burnaby, BC, where I grew up, and to join the Tsleil-Waututh elders in their opposition to the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. Any of you heard about that pipeline? A few of you, all right. The Trans Mountain, as you all know then, goes from Edmonton, Alberta to Burnaby, BC, and it currently moves about 300,000 barrels of oil a day. Kinder Morgan, the company that owned it, and now Canada who bought it, want to expand its capacity by building this other pipeline alongside the existing one so that it can carry 890,000 barrels of oil per day. The pipeline project runs through Indigenous lands and waterways, and many Indigenous nations in Alberta support the pipeline, and some here in BC support it. That's a fact. But many don't. The pipeline's terminal is located in the non-treated lands of the Tsleil-Waututh and also the Squamish and Musqueam nations. And none of those peoples have given their consent to this project. These nations don't want to see the pipeline expanded because they're concerned about the well-being of their own territories and their waterways, their traditional lands. But they're also deeply concerned about this, about global warming. They believe that we need to radically reduce the extraction of fossil fuels in this age of climate destabilization and ecological crisis. So let's be honest, these nations can make a fancy profit if they twin that pipeline. They could get a lot of money for it. They're choosing not to, in large part, because they want to bear a burden on behalf of us all. So the Tsleil-Waututh asked church leaders to join them in prayer, asking us to ponder what our commitment to the TRC's 48th call to action, that call for churches to adopt the declaration, what does that mean in this situation? Yet the Tsleil-Waututh elders were inviting us not simply to come and pray about Indigenous rights, they were also inviting us to act. They were also inviting us to stand up in support of their rights in their nonviolent struggle against the powers who are seeking to push this pipeline through their lands. So what was I to do? If I went to Burnaby, there was a good chance that I was going to get arrested, as others had been. The Supreme Court of BC had issued a ruling that said that no one could protest in front of the pipeline facilities, at least within a certain distance of the pipeline facilities. And that's where the Indigenous leaders were organizing this particular gathering. If I went, I could go to jail. I could get a record. I might even get in trouble with my church, whom I love, and put my job in jeopardy. As I reflected on that invitation, I opened up my little call to action booklet. And if you don't have one of those booklets, you got to get one. You can download it for free off the internet. This, I think, is, you know how Karl Barth used to say, newspaper and gospel or Bible together? This is how we can interpret much of the gospel in our current context. So I opened up that little booklet and I read Call to Action 48 again, where it says, we call upon churches and all interfaith social justice groups to formally adopt and comply with the principles, norms, and standards of the UN Declaration. And then this is where it gets really interesting. Point 3 of that call says this: complying with the Declaration would include the following commitment: engaging in ongoing public dialogue and actions. My eyes settled on that word, actions. Talk is very important, but words, we know from the Apostle James, must be accompanied by deeds. That call, that word, action, together with my faith in the story of the God who became poor, gave me strength to say yes to this invitation. So 2 weeks later, I got on a train and I went to Burnaby because we need more people in this time who are going to take risks to be with suffering peoples who are defending a creation that is, and this is not a stretch to say this, but I think this is theological language we need, a creation that is being crucified right now. And on Friday, April 20th, I, together with 16 church leaders, spent the day praying, singing songs, and reading aloud articles of the Declaration before the gates of that Kinder Morgan Westridge Marine Terminal. We stood there with impacted indigenous peoples in their nonviolent resistance, and we effectively blocked construction on the pipeline expansion project that day. When the police came, they immediately gave notice to us faith leaders, informing us that we needed to leave immediately. Well, they gave us about 5 minutes to discern. If we were willing to go, we would not be arrested. But if we refused to leave voluntarily, we would be taken into custody. So I had a decision to make. In conversation with elders, both Native and non-Native, we believed it was important that at least a few church leaders submit themselves to arrest. Such action would serve to demonstrate our willingness to stand up for basic indigenous rights, even at cost. Moreover, it would nurture conversation in the public and in the church as to the importance of honoring indigenous rights and indigenous law, because this is in keeping with indigenous law, even though it's saying it flouts Canadian law. How do we honor indigenous rights when it does break Canadian law? When do we say we need to obey God rather than some men? So I chose, along with others, not to leave when I was asked to by the RCMP, and as a result, I was arrested and charged with criminal contempt. And then last August, I had to go back to court to face trial, and at the end of that week, I was sentenced to 7 days in jail. Since that time, a lot of people have asked me, was it worth it? Getting arrested, going to jail, getting a lot of people in your church upset with you. For me, reconciliation is about living into relationships of respect with God, with Indigenous peoples, and with the land. And trying to do that in the way of the one who was rich, but who became poor, and so suffered the fate of the poor. What I did wasn't heroic, nor was it the only faithful response that one could take. But it was, I believe, a step toward right relationship. It was more than good words. It was an action in support of the basic human rights lifted up in the Declaration that all Canadians and all Christians need to uphold. Oscar Romero once said, like Jesus, the church's mission is to express the hopes and the anguish of the oppressed in a spirit of joy at being accorded the privilege of running the very same risks they do. That is powerful. Are we willing to run the same risks that the poor and oppressed do? Mennonite World Conference then offers us this invitation to, quote, follow Jesus' example to respond to the cries of Indigenous peoples worldwide. This response is not concerned only with caring for people suffering within unjust structures, but it also, note this, includes efforts to disarm the structures of oppression themselves, in order that all God's people and creation might experience the psalmist's hope that truth and mercy meet and justice and peace kiss. Imagine if a few of our Mennonite churches in BC courageously decided to embrace that mission. Imagine if even small pockets within our churches decided to heed the cries of the poor and the cries of the earth in these days. Imagine the streams of justice and healing that could flow. Imagine how we would meet Christ, and how we could grow in Christ, the God who became poor, together. Sisters and brothers, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share. I want to thank the courage of those who ever invited me. May the Spirit continue to sustain and empower Point Grey in our Mennonite as you pursue the risk-taking mission of Jesus in these most urgent of times. Thank you.